Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 22nd day of August, Anno Domini 2026. Actually, if I say Anno Domini, I should probably also say Dei Saturnus. Anyway, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I apologize for being Chris Horn.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I want to thank Chris, apologetic Chris Horn, for stepping in. Steve Ray, one step out of the law, somewhere in the Southwest, hiding with the hole in the head gang. But I would like to thank Chris for taking time off from his very valuable Saturday to come in and do this nonsense with us.
It's my favorite.
Well, you need to get a better hobby.
I don't. I really don't.
All right. I'm going to read the... Now, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. And I will read the news. I apologize for my voice. I don't know where it went, but I'm hoping it comes back soon. If you look at the tasks running on your Windows computer, you may see dozens of them. They are managed by the task host. The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, has confirmed that ransomware gangs are also exploiting a high-severity Windows task host vulnerability that was flagged as actively exploited in April. Task host is a core Windows system component that allows DLL-based processes to run in the background and prevents data corruption by ensuring they close properly during shutdown. This Windows privilege escalation security flaw was originally patched by Microsoft way back in November. From April to November, it was unpatched and stems from a link following weakness that affects Windows 11 and Windows Server 2025 devices. But many people do not run updates with any regularity. This can be understandable, given all the problems that Microsoft has been having with updates, but it does put users at risk for takeover. In this attack, following successful exploitation, local attackers with basic user permissions can gain system privileges and take full control of unpatched devices. Microsoft has yet to update its security advisory to confirm in the wild exploitation, but on Friday, CISA updated its known exploited vulnerabilities catalog, or KEV, again flagging the security vulnerabilities being abused by ransomware gangs. You may think this doesn't affect you since you have to be a local user to exploit it, but remember, any hacker who gains access to your computer, even remotely, becomes a local user. So if you've been putting off updates, now might be a good time to set aside an afternoon, and it may be a whole afternoon, to do that.
At least.
At least. So yeah. Our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows task host flaw being actively exploited. And your choices are, where are they? I'm up to date. I'll get up to date today. I'll pencil it in. Going commando, baby. And Windows? Phooey. So far, we have 28 votes, and Windows phooey, with or without the P, is in the lead with over half of them, followed by I'm up to date. Only one person going commando and only two people penciling it in. Well, and you can vote in the poll. It's real easy to do. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. And vote in the poll. And once you're done with that, of course, you can give us a call about this or dang near anything under the sun at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. This is one of the issues I have always had with Windows, and it just doesn't get any better. This thing was found in April, which of course means it was there earlier, but that's true of any exploit. It was found in April. It wasn't even fixed for months. It was found in April. It wasn't fixed till November. And it's still hitting people because they don't update.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about Linux is updates happen every day, and mostly they happen in the background.
Yeah,
you don't even have to reboot your system. So doing updates is an absolute no-brainer. In Windows, you have to actually do the update. 90% of the time, you're going to have to reboot, and it's a pain.
Well, before you do that, you got to say a prayer that when you do reboot, that your machine is going to boot up.
Yeah, and that you've got a good backup.
Yeah.
Not that the backup story for Windows 11 is great. The restore process is not painless.
Right. It's right. And there's just, you know, we preach this over and over again, and yet every day we hear from people, my machine crashed, I don't have a backup, what do I do? You do nothing. I'm sorry, if you didn't back up, the likelihood of getting your data back lives with Drive Savers.
Yep.
You pay them $1,000 to tell you whether or not they can find your data.
Yeah, it depends on what kind of crash, right?
Well, right. But generally speaking, prepare for the worst.
Yeah.
Right? So that's why you do backups. You prepare for the worst. I have never had that kind of crash, but I have I'd have to count them backups of my system every single day.
Right.
So the worst I'm going to lose is one day's worth of stuff. I back up at like 2 a.m. every day.
Yeah. I mean, the backup restore scenario for a modern computer is pretty painful if your hard drive fails, because your hard drive, everything you buy these days is an NVMe. And when those fail,
well, it's
hopefully your operating system tells you, hey, this is going bad.
But it usually
doesn't. Do something. There's plenty of times where it just trucks merrily along.
Well, the biggest thing, which we have said for decades, is once your machine fails and you've got those prized photos, I don't care. Anything else can be replaced, rebuilt, whether it's a document or a letter that to do this or do that. But those photos of those moments in time, once you've lost those off your computer, they're gone, folks. There's no bringing them back. And quite often, Drive Saver, you're going to pay the big bucks, and it's still a gamble whether you even get them back so they're usable.
Yeah. You talk to somebody who has had their house burned down or some kind of disaster like that where they lost everything, their number one regret every time is the family photos.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So don't think about it. Don't think of it as your computer or anything else. Think of it as our family memories. Where are those?
Right. Well, yeah, like my late wife. I mean, I still got all those photos of her and that up on the cloud in three different places. And of my grandkids and everything else, different projects that I've done. And I would feel bad if I lost those because there are a lot of good memories.
Right. Well, and I can't tell you how many times I've watched somebody with their laptop toss it in the back seat. Just fling it, you know, drop it in the back seat.
And you flinch.
And that's okay if it's your Chromebook, right? You ruin your Chromebook. You haven't lost that much because it's all either in the cloud or on your home machine or whatever. But you know, when people lose their only machine, particularly through negligence, I mean, I can't tell you the number of times at RIT we had people who'd come in and say, I left this on the top of my car, on the roof of my car, you know, and it fell off and crashed. Okay.
It happens. I mean,
one of the things we did at RIT was every time you logged in, we backed up your machine.
Cool. I know.
But that's because it was a work machine. We could do that. Mm-hmm. If it's your personal machine, that's on you. So, yeah, I mean, I am admitted, I was a system administrator, which means that there is no possible way I was ever paranoid enough. And I get that. But everybody should be dang near as paranoid as I am about losing their data. And everybody puts it off because setting it up is a pain in the patoot.
It takes time.
I understand that. But once it's done, it's done.
On a rainy day or a miserable day that you don't want to go out, sit down in front of your computer. You can't go out and do yard work or anything else. Sit there and do it. You know, relax. Put on a pot of coffee or get yourself a beverage and sit there. Get organized. Put it all in, and it's done.
That's why I recommend something like pCloud. Once you've set it up, you never have to think about it again as long as you live. And that's why I like Amazon Prime. Unlimited free storage of photos today. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but today. And Google Photos gives you 15 gigs. So, you know, you have no excuse. You have no excuse.
Well, even the Google storage, you know, you're going to, you know, granted they give you the 15 gig, but you can buy more.
You can buy
and
all
it's
you want.
And it's relatively cheap.
Right.
For the extra insurance to have that your day, especially, like I said, your photos. If you're a big photo person, you know, got grandkids or your kids are growing up or the first this or first that, you know, it's saved up there. And it's good even through their lifetime. They'll be able to grab those photos if you share the folders with them, and they can always see them too. Oh, I was into this when I was growing up. Yeah. You know, and they can view them and show their kids.
Yep. Yeah. It's.
What do you think is the reason that people don't act on that?
I think there's a couple of reasons. One, it's hard.
No, lazy.
Well, yeah. Well, yes. I was trying to be
what's the nice reason?
More positive about that. It is hard to set up, which means it's by difficult and hard. I mean, it's technically you have to think it through, you know, and that's why I recommend something like pCloud, because it's just. It says, you know, what folders do you want to back up? Oh, these. Okay, you're done. Thank you. Finished.
Right.
It's hard, and it also. Look, I've got a whole page on it. If you go to this to the Soundbites website, I have to log into there. Sorry. If you go to the Soundbites website under some important links, the second one is backup, 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 and it takes you to one of my web pages. Where you can see all kinds of backup programs for every major operating system on the planet. And some are free and some cost money and whatever, whatever. But, you know, and the ones you pay for generally are easier to set up than the ones that are free. And that's the trade-off you make. You pay for ease of use. But in whatever you do, you should be setting this stuff up. Every single time you set up a new computer, you should be backing it up because we put stuff off. You know, it's the procrastination.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. That's why I say it's laziness. In the 28 years that I was in business, the one thing I heard too often was they'd bring their computer in and say, it's not booting. I said, where's your backup? Well, I meant to back it up. That's the whole problem. Intentions are paved with, you know, well, I was going to, maybe later, maybe this, maybe that. Once it's, you know, dead and gone, there's no reviving it, folks. And they'd get all upset and they'd sit there. Well, you got to get them back. Sorry, but out of miracles for today.
Yep.
I just can't do it. And I felt bad for the folks. Don't get me wrong. I felt bad for them because I couldn't get those photos or this back or that. It is what it is. They're electronics, no different than a light bulb. Once a light bulb burns out, it's gone. You're not going to revive it.
Right. And that's why, you know, backing up is so important. And you need to back up every single day, unless you don't do anything on your computer. Yeah, I guess if you never write a document or never take a photo. And, of course, backing up also includes your phone. That's why something like Google Photos and Amazon Photos automatically backs up all your photos from your phone.
Yeah.
You take a picture, 2 minutes later, it's in the cloud. Done.
They have a vested interest in not screwing that up.
Yep.
So that you can lose your device and not lose your data. Right? More than just photos. Every one of them is going to try and walk you through and say, okay, here's where I think your data is. You probably want to back this up.
I have a friend who's a big noise at Google. And not that you ever send me anything, but he's told me, you know, you have no idea how many backups we have. They back up one data center to another data center to another data center.
Which is a strategy if I'm at home and I don't want to pay for cloud backups, but I've got old computers, old thumb drives, something, I could just put those in a manila envelope and write, you know, Chris Horn's backups and then give it to a family member, a friend or something. Who's gonna mess that up? Nobody.
When my wife passed, she had, I had given her pCloud. So she had that. But also, I took all of her documents and pictures and everything else and stuck it on all my backups.
Yeah.
And then I made a copy of everything and gave it to my daughter.
Right.
So it's everywhere.
It's distributed now.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's important. That's why we talk about 3-2-1 method of backup. Three different backups in two different places, one of which is out of your house, preferably in the cloud.
Yeah.
All right. We should probably talk to somebody on the phone. And I guess it's going to be Dave from Spencerport, New York. What's up, Dave?
Yes. Hi, guys. Thank you for taking the call. I had a question on some of the newer Samsung phones. I believe now they have the 26 out, and they have the S and they have the S Ultra. And I was just wondering if you could explain to me a little bit, is there a lot of differences between the two? Or?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so as he said, there's new phones out from Samsung. The Ultra is a bigger... It's essentially like some have the regular model and the XL model or the Pro model. The Ultra is bigger, it's heavier, it's more expensive.
Right, it's probably more storage.
Generally more storage. It also has a better camera, a bigger battery, and the pen.
Right, so everything is like plus one at least.
So the S model will be smaller, lighter, more budget friendly. So, you know, it depends on how much money you want to pay, how much RAM you want to get, how big you need the phone to be. As I get older, a larger phone is a godsend. And I admit that. So, you know, as you age, maybe the larger phone is better. But now it's maybe harder to fit in your pocket or whatever. So there's a lot of variables to take into consideration, but those are the major differences. It's bigger, it's heavier, it's more expensive, it has a better camera and a bigger battery.
Which maybe none of those things matter to you.
Is there a minimum type memory that I should be looking for?
Do you take a lot of pictures?
No, I do take some, but not a lot.
Okay, so a 64 gig model for the average user would be fine. If you take a lot of photos, or then 128 gig or 256 gig model would be better. If you don't mind managing your photos, that is to say saving them off somewhere and deleting them from the phone and yada, 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 then again, that 64 gig model will be fine.
And if you look at the system information on your phone now, you'll see how much storage you're using. And I mean, if you're using more than 64 gig, you probably don't want to buy a 64 gig phone. But maybe that's fine.
Right. Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate the help very much.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. Right. Right now, I am using 64 gig of my phone. So I would want at least 128 gig, if not 256.
Right, right.
So, yeah, that's an excellent point, Chris. The new phones are out. The new Pixels are out. The new Galaxies are out. We think there's new Apple phones coming in a couple weeks, maybe.
You know what? Steve isn't here. I'm not going to pretend to pay attention to new hardware coming out on his behalf.
Yeah.
If he's not here to say, oh, yeah, it's going to be 9.5 days, I can't make it up.
Yeah, right. But we should tell you where Steve is.
Yeah.
Steve is at an air show today. He's at the, is it 2529 Macedon Road, Macedon Center Road. And it's the RamsRC.org, the Rochester area. I don't know what it stands for.
I can
Rochester
only...
Aero Modeling Society. I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
And that's happening this weekend. Steve is there. He's the announcer. He's the one who says, oh, that guy crashed. I'm sorry. I mean, he's the one who said.
That guy just wasted $200. Yeah,
$400, $800.
Yeah, right. I'm sure.
So yeah, there's, that's happening, right now. If you go to ramsrc.org, you'll see, what's going on. That's the Ed Van Wagner Memorial Model Air Show and Open House, today and tomorrow, at 2529 Macedon Center Road in Palmyra. So, it's free parking and free admission, but any proceeds, you are encouraged. Any proceeds will benefit the Macedon Town Ambulance, which is a good
right.
thing. So
right. They're a nonprofit.
They're not for profit. Yeah. So and of course, then there's the next weekend is the Northeast Model Helicopter Jamboree. Always fun.
It's terrifying. I mean, it's like terrifying in a good way that you can't believe that. How do you fly one of these things like this?
And they just get out there. It's like, oh, there's 10-year-old kids.
Right. Oh, here we go. No big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you've got a free day today or tomorrow, while you're listening to the show, you can drive out. But that's happening right now. They are a 501c3 or whatever the numbers are. So you can go there and see what's going on with them. It's a pretty good deal. But yeah, lots of new phones are coming out right now. And, lots of people are chomping at the bit to get them. And I understand the folds are, there are more folds now than there ever were.
Because I think they finally figured out how to make the folds like not awful.
Well, right? First generation was terrible.
Yeah.
Second generation was okay.
Right.
Third generation, not so bad. You know, they're saying like, millions of folds. They tested millions of folds and all of that stuff.
I mean, it's really the device,
much less.
Right? Like we're converging on young people that maybe the next generation after this, whatever that generation AA is.
Yeah,
because we're at Z already.
Whatever they're going to call it next. Yeah, on beyond Z.
They might only have mobile. Right, they might not really use.
We're already there. It's a mobile first society.
Yeah,
in right. many ways.
Right, but I think when it still comes to, maybe that's wrong. I struggle with the mobile first all the time. Except that's not where any work gets done for people that have a day job.
Right, right, right.
I mean, that's not. But fair, for the average, right? Like, there's plenty of people that right. don't go to an office.
Work generally happens on laptops or desktops. Leisure happens on phones.
Yeah.
For more and more people.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will say, oh, the Soundbites website doesn't look great on mobile at this point. And I've had things in my life I haven't done anything with it. All right, listen. We're going to take a quick break. Don't go too far because we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Chris Horn, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. And we will see you in just a couple of minutes.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm still Chris Horn.
The quantum superposition of Chris Horn, is that what we're saying?
I'm full of qubits.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. And while you do that, I will read some more news. Theoretically, this is the Microsoft news. Theoretically, getting users' passwords and other sensitive data without user confirmation is hard to do. But some researchers managed to do just that pretty easily. They simply asked Microsoft 365 Copilot, and it cheerfully did. Worse, like many AI programs, Copilot can receive prompts that are embedded in a URL. So pretty much anybody can get at, for example, data in your OneDrive or Outlook just by sending a link to your email or via text. It makes the connection and sends back the data without asking for any confirmation from the user.
Oh, no.
How special is that?
It's terrible.
In a completely unrelated issue, users had trouble searching in Microsoft 365 apps, including Outlook on the web, Outlook desktop, SharePoint Online, and OneDrive on Tuesday. The root cause is what Microsoft describes as a recent deployment that causes resource utilization problems. Microsoft says it has already developed a fix and deployed it to reduce resource pressure and restore service for all affected Microsoft 365 users. Please note that this is entirely separate from the earlier incident that broke file search for OneDrive, Outlook on the web, and SharePoint Online users, or the massive outage that took down Azure and Microsoft 365 users in North America, or the incident that brought down GitHub, its website, the API, and many other services. Just to be clear. Microsoft has resolved the bug that caused Windows Defender to crash after a recent security update, resulting in access violation errors on some affected systems. The fix will be applied automatically after installing Windows Defender Antivirus Signature Update 1.457.236.0.leftelbow.j or later. Users are advised to update their systems via Windows Update, then check whether they have the latest security intelligence update installed by trying to run the update again. That's apparently the only way you can tell.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah. Please note that this is entirely separate from the earlier incident where Defender flagged DigiCert root certificate entries as malware or the widespread Microsoft Defender portal outage blocked access. Microsoft announced that it removed the Windows Management Instrument Command Line, or WMIC, tool from Windows 11 24 H2 and 25 H2, as well as from Windows 11 beta builds released this week. WMIC is a legacy built-in Windows command line utility that helps interact with the Windows Management Instrumentation System using text commands. It is being actively exploited by cyber criminals. There will be no replacement. So anyone who's built batch files around it are SOL, seriously out of luck. Microsoft has reminded customers that systems running Home and Pro editions of Windows 11 24 H2 will stop receiving updates on October 13th, 2026. After this update, devices running these editions will no longer receive monthly security or non-security preview updates containing protections from the latest security threats. So even Windows 10 will be better protected than Windows 11 24H2. Customers are advised to upgrade to Windows 11 25H2, also known as the Windows 11 2025 update, which became available back in September of 2024 as a minor update installed through an enablement package. Devices running Windows 11 24H2 Home and Pro aren't managed by IT departments, will automatically upgrade to Windows 11 25H2. However, Customers can still choose whether to restart or postpone the update. Here's a hint. Don't delay the update. And also don't postpone giving us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 800-790-0415. I am the king of segues. Look, Microsoft traditionally has had a lot of errors. And we're seeing many, 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 many more lately. And a lot of that has to do with AI. They are finding more problems because they're using AI to search for them. And if AI gets it right, it will do a better job than the humans. That's a large if.
Yeah.
But still, if. And so that's why we're seeing more and more fixes. Also, part of that, part and parcel, along with that, is the fact that Microsoft fired most of the QA department and turned all that over to AI. So
what could go wrong?
Quality assurance has in fact, gone down fairly significantly. It's faster and it's cheaper, but it's not, you know, the old programmer's wheel divided into three.
Yeah.
Faster, cheaper, better. Faster, cheaper, good. Pick right. Any two.
Right.
They pick cheap and fast, which means they left out good. So it's a confluence of things. And they just have fewer people. You know, it's ludicrous to think this is true because they are a company with hundreds of billions of dollars. But they have fewer people working on Windows and fewer people working on Apple than there are working on Linux. And that's simply a fact. That is simply one of the reasons why fixes and updates and stuff like that come out much faster for Linux than either Apple or Microsoft. And it's just a fact, or Google for that matter.
Yeah.
And that includes Android and iOS as well. Right. So, you're using an operating system that's always behind. And of course, Microsoft has the added problem that it is the biggest target. And so the bad guys go after it because if they can find an exploit for it, they've got a much wider pool to swim in. There are a lot of Apple computers. There are more Linux yeah. systems every day. But compared to the Windows systems, they are minuscule.
Right. That's where the high-value targets are.
Right. Right. That's where the high-value targets are. Now, of course, we're also seeing that Germany, I think Belgium, and now China are dumping Windows
yeah.
in favor of Linux. And a lot of that is this exact reason. They can get fixes faster, easier, and more thorough. Because how many times do we see fixes for fixes for fixes?
Yeah, I think the Chinese
patch
government
the patch
was
is
running...
the patch that fixes that patch.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then a rollback.
Yeah.
I think the Chinese government was running entirely on Windows XP.
Yes, I believe they were.
And they said, all right, we can't let this happen again.
And now they're going to go with, they don't know yet whether they're going to go with Red Star or I think the other one is Kylin. I don't remember the name of the
right,
other one. I think it was Kylin.
One of those two.
Right. They haven't decided yet.
Right.
Both of those come out of China.
As a Linux distribution.
As a Linux distribution. I don't know if they know that there is now finally, after some 20 years, an update to Hannah Montana Linux. I don't know if they know that. But, you know, that should really be in the running. I think that
I'm
you
only
have to
concerned
know.
That Nick knows that there's an update to Hannah Montana Linux.
Yeah, well, but there is 100 years ago when I had an 8-year-old daughter, I somehow got on a mailing list.
For that.
And I just got a notice and said, we finally, you know, it was a moribund for so many decades. Yeah, yeah. And now we've finally updated Hannah Montana Linux.
It's shocking.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Since it's the only email I've gotten in like 25 years, right. I'm not really right. that worried
Why
about
unsubscribe
it.
If it's, you know,
right.
it's all Signal.
Right. Not a lot of cruft in that particular right. thing. Right. So, but yeah, I don't know if they noticed that or if they've checked it out yet. I haven't.
Right.
By the way. But yeah, if you want to laugh, go find Hannah Montana Linux. But they're looking at either Kylin or Red Star, and there are other countries that are closely looking at moving from Microsoft to Linux, and Microsoft has no one to blame but themselves. I'm sorry, but that's simply the truth. Well, they're the ones who've made it expensive, slow to update, fixes on fixes on fixes.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no actual privacy, right?
Like, and there's no privacy.
If Microsoft wants to,
they want your data
to upload what you're doing. They can,
right?
They can do that. Their telemetry is already pretty invasive. If you look at what's actually being sent,
it's kind of everything.
Yeah, and I to pivot back to AI a little bit, one of the things I find interesting about the open source ecosystem is that you can see that various projects, different distributions of Linux, the different tools that we use on all the different Linux distros, are coming out with policies to say, will we accept AI written code?
Right.
Or changes or bug reports or whatever. And sometimes it's fine. Sometimes if you throw a big AI system at it, it actually comes out with some gems in terms of like, hey, these are actually security vulnerabilities. You should probably do something about that. And I think these might be fixes. That might be awesome.
Yep. The problem is,
yeah,
Linus Torvalds, the guy who created Linux, talks about this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And he, I won't use the word he uses.
He is not filtered.
He's not right, and he's also not a big fan of AI at this point.
Sure.
And it's not that there aren't good ones. He's from his point of view, the problem really is that there's so many of a very low quality that the noise overwhelms the real data.
Yeah.
The signal to noise ratio is very high on the noise side.
Yeah. And for people that are not disclosing that this was AI.
Right.
Yeah, for an open source project that it's a miasma, if you're a popular project. But the only way to cut down on it is for those kinds of projects is to make a policy and then use tools that try and detect what's coming from AI
right.
and shut it down.
And the other part of the problem is that a lot of the people who are submitting AI fixes didn't test them. AI says this will work and they submit it.
Yeah. Well, I have really bad news for you.
Yeah.
In the corporate software writing world right now, not only is, I'll say everybody, I know it's not every single company, I know it's not every single project, but every company, every project is trying to pivot as hard as they can to using AI and not just, you know, ChatGPT, right? It's not that. There's way more tooling. It's super complicated. All of the different like specification levels you jump into where maybe AI is writing this document that leads to these documents that leads it. So it's like a waterfall model, but with driven by AI.
Right.
And the pressure is that you're using AI to write all this stuff and then write the code and then write tests that test the code and then automate the delivery, the deployment of the code out to services or customers or however you share your code. And to have increasingly less human intervention and more gates where you tell AI how to evaluate how to keep going. Here's what needs to be correct. Here's what needs to be green or passing or of sufficient quality in order to keep moving forward.
Right.
And I want to say that everybody's doing this. And big companies like Microsoft, Apple, Google, they're all in.
Yeah.
And that's not really a story they're telling us in that way, that the reduction in quality might, you know, might be a cliff. It might yep. be this the terrifying cloud of AI just sort of like saying, yeah, here's some more features. They don't do anything. They're semi-meaningless to a normal person, but we got to just keep going. Where with an open source project, you have the opportunity to see what is the policy for change
right.
in this thing, so that if they want like a sensible, well thought out plan by a person who has some kind of vision, who has some ability to invent novel new things, which AI isn't really doing that.
Right.
You can see how they're doing it. And that's, for me, like the long-term hope for open source everything is that it is in the open, even if there's a different miasma of people trying to drive down quality by not disclosing that, you know, hey, I wrote some code. This is going to be a really great change. I just want this button.
Right.
How did you test it? Nobody tests stuff anymore. We just make changes.
We let the end users test it. They're our beta testers.
Right.
Okay, right.
And again, you're right. If AI is a tool, is good. But like any tool, you have to know how to use it and know when to use it.
Right.
It's the old everything looks like a nail.
Yeah, I'm. Oh, no. Every you. It's not that everything looks like a nail. The approach with AI is that you switch to only solving problems that AI can solve for you, and everybody is just wrangling text to make it do stuff.
Right.
It's kind of nauseating, honestly, to be part of it. Except when it works. Like if it's one of those stories where, like, hey, go find. Just look at this code base and go find some security problems. Go find some bugs that don't have tests around. And it comes back with real stuff. It's amazing.
Yeah. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Mary from Rochester, New York. What's up, Mary?
Hello?
Hi.
I can barely hear you.
I'm sorry. We'll try to be a little louder. What's up?
Okay. I have a question. It might be a dumb question, but I'll ask anyway. I disconnected my Windows computer, my Windows 10 computer, from the internet, and I have a wireless printer. How can I use that wirelessly with my computer if it's disconnected? I mean, should I just connect it to the router, or how would that work?
Well, if you're off the internet entirely, you've turned off your Wi-Fi, is what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how to use Wi-Fi any other way other than through the internet.
Yeah, right. So your wireless printer requires Wi-Fi to talk. So you would have to connect to your Wi-Fi to print wirelessly. The thing to check is whether or not that printer will also connect directly to your computer. Many of them will do both Wi-Fi and a direct connection. And then all
right,
you have
I
to
can
do, is
do a direct connection, but the wire is just too short for where my printer is.
Like,
you know,
like most people that have a wireless printer, you put it somewhere where the wire is just a hassle.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So your wireless printer might also have Bluetooth? You could do a Bluetooth connection if it supports that. That seems unlikely.
The other thing you could do is assuming it isn't going to get in your way, like it's past the doorway or something, you could get a longer cable.
Yeah.
But
all right, so my wireless idea is out the door then, right?
Well, so there's another way to do this, which is depending on where do you get your Wi-Fi from?
Are you asking me?
I am.
Like, I'm trying to think. I forget the name of the router. Oh my God.
So your
one
router.
One of the popular ones.
Right. So your router, if you have a separate router and you can log into it as administrator or admin or, you know, something, they might have settings that let you say, for my Windows 10 laptop, it can be on Wi-Fi, but it can't get to the internet.
Okay.
It depends on what router you have, and right. without knowing the name and the model.
Right.
Oh, it's a Netgear. That's right. It just hit me.
Right.
Netgear.
Right. Netgear has all different interfaces based on what series of hardware you're. I don't want to tell you to go look in a spot and say, oh yeah, it's exactly here in advanced setup or something.
Yeah, it might be like two years old now.
I'm sure it's great. Like, honestly, I'm sure it's great, and it might have that setting. I would maybe go to the Netgear website and ask their chatbot to tell you if it knows. Or maybe I would ask ChatGPT, saying, I have this exact model Netgear access point, and I want to do exactly this with a Windows 10 laptop. And it might tell you, if you go A, then B, then C, there's a setting, and you can just say add Windows 10 laptop, because your Windows 10 laptop is going to have an address that your Wi-Fi understands, and you could just block that.
Yeah, I would start at the Netgear chatbot.
Right. So the key word here is Wi-Fi access point. Is that?
Yeah. So it's your Netgear, right? Your Netgear is your access point. And what you want to do is block internet access for a specific computer.
Right. So, yeah, what you're going to say to the chatbot is, I have a Netgear router model number X, and I want to get my Windows 10 to talk to my local network, but not the internet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Because it's possible. Whether or not that Netgear lets you do it, I'm not really sure.
Right, it depends on the model.
Yeah, and there's another. There's a way in Windows to change the firewall settings so that your device can only talk to the local network. But all of that is pretty, like, inside baseball. Like, it's deep inside Windows firewall settings. I don't even know how to walk you through that. I would have to do some serious Googling myself to figure that out.
Right, that's why I called you, because I don't know how to do it either. I've always wondered how, and like, gee, this is really confusing, you know?
Yeah, do you have Windows 10 or 11?
It's Windows 10.
Right, which is fine if you're off the internet.
That's why I'm calling, because I disconnected it from the internet.
Right, I appreciate you knowing you got to do that. That's awesome.
Right. Yeah, I just use a Chromebook for everything now.
Right.
So, all right, well, I got some Googling to do, right?
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Well, like we said, that was a very good suggestion that Chris had, is go to the Netgear website. First, make sure you've got not just the name of the router, but also the model number.
Right.
Yeah.
And then go to their chatbot. It should be right on the front page.
Because this is the kind of request, the kind of setting that a small company would want to have done also. It's not like a weird edge case where only weirdos would ever do this. No, this is pretty normal. It's just an advanced setting.
Okay. Just a note, the reception on this phone is really bad. I can barely hear you. I guess you can hear me pretty clear, but I can barely hear you.
Well, we barely make any sense. So
yeah, that's why I apologize. I wasn't quite catching your name.
No, that's okay. I get it. But the phone system might need a little tweaking.
Yeah.
Yeah, no question.
But thank you for bearing with us.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for the information.
Good luck. Thank you.
Good luck.
All right. Bye.
Yeah, it's...
So there's firewall settings to say, my local network is 192.168.1.something.
Right. All right. That music tells us, the first hour of this show is in the books. But don't despair. There's a whole other hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. Oh, whoops. We're out of those. Okay. whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Chris Horn, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. But toll free at 800-790-0415. We're going to take a break, possibly a slightly longer break. So this is time for you to take a bio break, to go and get yourself a little snackaroony, maybe a beverage, possibly even of the adult persuasion. It's afternoon somewhere in the world. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites right here on Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Chris Horn, whether you like it or not.
There you go. The decisive Chris Horn, no longer a quantum superposition.
Right.
And we are sound bites at 4 minutes after the hour. And in fact, we have somebody waiting on the line. And if you're not on the line, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415 while we talk to Francis from Webster, New York. What's up, Francis?
Hey, hi. I just wondered if anybody caught the Meta ad on television. I think it's about AI, although they try not to mention that word at all. But they keep saying over and over again, we're betting on people.
Yeah.
As they lay off people.
Right. They're laying off
people.
But
it's interesting if you catch it.
Yep.
They're betting on people as the source of their income.
Well, right. They're betting that people will keep giving the money.
But that's it. I just thought I'd bring that up and let people look for them.
Yep. No, I thank you. That Meta ad is playing in a lot of places. Is this the one with the, is this the one about the company or is this the one about the glasses?
I think it's the company. It just keeps saying it shows different people.
Yeah.
And it mentions, I'm not sure if it mentions AI, it mentions technology or something, but it says some people are betting on this. We're betting on people, you know. And
right.
It is kind of a...
That's interesting.
Right.
Interesting.
So, yeah, a lot of this has to do with the fact that right now... Mark Zuckerberg is going in front of Congress all the time, and people think he's a robot to begin with. Meta just keeps getting, you know, Facebook and all the other pieces of Meta just keep getting more and more AI and less human. And I think this is their way of attempting to block that. And I don't think too many people are fooled by it, frankly.
Right. Let's hope not.
Yeah, exactly. But that's
although my grandkids are like 100% sold on AI. So.
Well, like we've been saying, AI is a tool, and in the right hands and for the right purpose, it's an exceptionally good tool. But it isn't for everything. You don't use a saw to drive in a nail. You don't use a screwdriver to cut two boards in half. I mean, you can.
Right.
Theoretically, at least.
Right.
But yeah, so
well, I thought too. It's a it's a thin possibility that AI might discover that it's not good for us and it destroys itself.
That would
it turns
be okay.
itself off. It turns off all the data centers.
Well, and so that's of course the other problem. Data centers are taking over a lot of arable land. They're using up an awful lot of water that
yep,
we're running
Arizona.
Out of to begin with. It's stressing the
it's way beyond
power
noise
grid. What?
It's way beyond noise pollution, right? Like, because they're
yeah.
these massive, yeah, massive it, complexes that make it impossible to live near them.
So it, right now, it's you know that's why Google has put a lot of their data centers on cargo ships. They cool them with water from the ocean, and they're out in the middle of nowhere. They can make all the noise they want. Who cares?
Right. I mean, hey, the yeah. you know, global warming, the ocean's already getting warmer. Just double down.
But honestly, the amount yeah. of heat that they would put into the water is fairly minuscule compared to, like, El Nino.
Sure.
And things like sure. that. So if it's got to go anywhere, okay. So, yeah, no, and I get it. You're absolutely right, Francis. This is Meta is just trying to put lipstick on their pig, and so far nobody's buying it.
Right, right. Let's hope. All righty.
All That's right,
it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, I'll read a little Apple and Google news. Walmart will soon allow you to pay for your items with Google Pay or Apple Pay. And about stinking time, I say.
Really?
In an announcement on Friday, Walmart said it's going to bring tap-to-pay capabilities to select Walmart and Sam Club's locations starting August 24th, before rolling out support to all U.S. stores by the end of 2026 and gas stations by mid-2027. This launch has been a long time coming, as Walmart is one of the last major retailers not to support Apple Pay or Google Pay. The rollout is not going to be fast, so don't get excited if you can't waltz into Walmart this afternoon and tap. I mean, you can tap dance.
Yeah. You,
that's right. allowed. Is
if
it allowed
you,
in
you
Walmart?
You can do it if you want to look awkward.
Right. The iOS 26.61, iPad OS 26.61, and Mac OS Tahoe 26.62 updates. Whew, all in one breath. Apple released on Monday fix almost 30 security vulnerabilities. This is Apple's third security release in 3 weeks. As AI surfaces bugs faster than the company's typical release schedule can absorb. We talked about that in the last half hour. The update includes security fixes that were previously added to the iOS 27, iPadOS 27, and macOS Golden Gate betas. The updates can be installed by opening up the Settings app, tapping into the General section, and selecting Software Update. An unprecedented number of Apple customers have reported receiving a recent threat notification alerting them to suspected spyware attacks targeting their devices. Apple sent out a new wave of notifications on Friday, alerting customers in 110 countries that they had been targeted with powerful spyware. From time to time, Apple sends these types of alerts in batches to customers that it believes have been either targeted or compromised with malware normally used by governments. Apple notifies users on their iPhone lock screen, in their Settings app, via the email associated with their Apple account, and when users log in to their Apple account on the web. So you really don't have any excuse for not seeing it. Google's controversial new rules for installing apps from unverified developers are getting very real fast. We first learned in March that Android would introduce a new process for users who still want to sideload these apps, complete with a 24-hour waiting period. This is all due to the lawsuit that they lost to Epic. Google has now started rolling out that advanced flow ahead of the first checkpoint for developer verification. Advanced flow is the route you'll need to take if you want to install an app from a developer who hasn't registered with Google. The process is deliberately cumbersome, including a phone reboot followed by a 24-hour waiting period. Google has to follow the law, but it doesn't have to make it easy. If you've ever wanted to share all of your digital conversations with OpenAI, we have good news for you. The AI Lab has just launched an Apple Messages plugin for ChatGPT, allowing interested users to connect their messages inbox with the chatbot. The benefits of doing this, according to OpenAI, are that users can use the plugin to sort, analyze, or edit their messages directly from ChatGPT. The plugin also works with Codex and ChatGPT Work, so users can use it professionally, not just personally. I cannot wait for the stories of the consequences of using this when they start rolling out. It's going to be fun. You know what else is fun? giving us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415.
The cautionary tales basically write themselves. Like it's,
boy, ain't that the truth. Look, Microsoft tried this with recall, taking everything you do every 6 seconds.
Oh, Microsoft? Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And putting it into their
They'd mess up a free lunch.
Stuff. Now Apple is trying it, and then, well, Apple with Apple Messages, rather OpenAI is trying it with Apple Messages.
Yeah, but that's a plug-in, right? Like, you elect to jump into that, where recall with right. Microsoft was whether or not you wanted it to happen right. or not. That was a wildly different sort of like Big Brother
right.
scenario.
Now, where it would be most useful is in business. And where I would definitely not want it is in business.
Yeah.
Because if you're discussing company secrets on email, which people do because it's internal email only, and suddenly the chatbot is grabbing all of that stuff and
yeah.
and putting it out on the web, that's probably not good.
Well,
just saying.
Good news, which I'd say ironically, Claude Code, the Anthropic stack of tooling for AI, the corporate approach to that is to give it access to all of your documents, whether that's in Google Docs or SharePoint or something, right. to give it access to all of the source code. And maybe you have MCP servers that help integrate other AI stuff so that you're giving it access to your ticketing system, to inventory control, to runtime diagnostics on what the servers are doing in the cloud, so that if you have somebody that wants to ask a question saying, what is the, why is this bug happening?
Right.
That stack of AI stuff can look everywhere and figure it out. And when it works, it's great. But if it's pulling from everybody's instant messages or from their text messages and using that as data to feed the system of knowledge, I say a lot of stupid stuff in text messages on purpose because I feel like that's a safe place for me to say dumb things.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
If I say to you, our boss is a moron.
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know I'm just blowing off steam and I don't right. hate the person or right. any of that stuff. I'm just blowing off steam right. and tomorrow I'll feel completely differently. But now that goes up to AI and it lives forever.
Yeah, right, right. The sentiment analysis of current employee communication is that the CEO's hair is getting very pointy haired.
Yes, exactly right. And this Chris Horn guy.
Yeah.
Clearly right. is unhappy in his job, and we may not want to keep him.
We might want to run our risk model on him.
Yep, that's exactly right. Now, and from the other side, I was a systems administrator, so I look at from that side too. For me, I think the benefits of AI are huge, and that's great, but I would want to run that on an internal system.
Yeah.
I would not want that going out to the web anywhere, even to a system that Mark Zuckerberg or who's the other one says is 100% secure, because I do not believe them and I do not trust them. I'm running it internally, I can block it myself.
Yeah.
I trust me. Yeah. I believe me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I could see if I were setting up, if I were a system administrator, I would be setting up an internal AI engine. Ola, I don't know what yeah. I'd use. I haven't really
right.
researched it. But I would set up an internal AI engine to do all of that stuff, and life would be perfect because we're doing it internally. We have all the benefits and none of the risk.
And that's why that strategy is why normal consumers can't buy a video card right now.
That's exactly right.
Or a new hard drive.
Well, they can. They just have to mortgage a kid.
Yeah,
yeah, really.
That's why all the prices have gone through the roof, because yep. every company is like, whoa. We're going to figure out how to do this internally before we even consider using a third-party tool. And the reality is that doing this stuff internally, even if you throw everything at it, it's just not as good. It's sadly, it's just, it's simply not.
I absolutely agree with that.
But the strategy,
it's secure.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Well,
more secure.
If you have a real sysadmin.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
At home, no. But out in the real world, if you've got an actual sysadmin who knows what they're doing, yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, and that's the problem we have. We have lots of, you can put a llama on an old laptop.
You can run it on Raspberry Pis, right? Like you can
run it on Raspberry Pis.
It's not terrible if you give it the right things to do, right? You have to pick a model that is small and appropriate to run on the hardware you have.
And you have to be patient.
I want to say, Dennis put me onto this. It's caniuse.ai. Is that right? Oh, I hope I didn't just tell everybody the wrong. I did. That's not the right one. It's something like that. I'll find the right. Right link. But it basically, what hardware do you have? What computer do you have? What GPU do you have? How much memory does it have? Here's what you can run at home. And that is super interesting.
Put in the stats and then.
Yeah, nice.
You tell it, I've got this model NVIDIA thing from 10 years ago. Well, all right, turns out it'll still run something.
So where is that?
It is www.caniuse.ai.
Nice. I'll put that up.
And you can flip that around with what do you want to do? And if you have unrealistic expectations, I want to do full motion video on a Raspberry Pi with AI. No, this is not going to happen.
Matter of fact, one of my friends, BJ at Home Depot where I worked, him and I were talking Tuesday, and he was sitting there saying, yeah, I got to get another computer because I've got a Windows 10 and it's starting to act up and that. And I said, what do you do with it? And he's telling me 99% of it. It's all on the web, even his banking and everything else. He does it that way. I said, get a Chromebook. Well, how much is that? It's a couple $100. What?
For a good one.
Yeah. I said, for a good one. I said, you know, it'll fit your needs. You can just use a Chromebook. It'll do everything. Well, yeah, but I want to be able to edit photos or anything. Yeah, you can do that. You can still surf the internet and do your banking online and everything. It'll do it for you. And it's a laptop. You can carry it around from room to room. You don't have to be in that particular room.
Yeah, we got to talk later.
But yes, you need to understand what your needs are, what it is you actually do, as opposed to, you know, someday I might want to build a rocket ship. Okay.
Go on.
Yeah.
But what your actual needs are today, what your real needs are going to be in the future.
Yeah.
And then you can say to yourself, okay, this is what I want to do. Here's what I need to do.
Yeah. And I think for most people, we don't necessarily approach buying hardware this way. But I think what's helpful is to think in terms of Dave's friend BJ from Home Depot, calling him out, saying, let's say 10% of the stuff he wants to do requires Windows for whatever reason, but 90% is just the web. I would still suggest getting a Chromebook or something to that effect so that you can have this good experience, good security, good backups, everything for the 90%, and then keep the old hardware to do the old thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because the reality is that, I need a new gaming laptop. You almost certainly do not. You really don't.
If you spend 10 hours a day playing games, yes, you need a gaming laptop. If you spend 10 hours a day watching YouTube videos, you do not.
You are wasting your money.
You are wasting your money.
Laptop.
That's exactly right. You'll buy two laptops.
You don't need to just reuse an old one, put Linux on it.
Exactly.
Don't get a Chromebook.
Well, he's been talking about Zorin Linux forever. Yeah. One of the things you can do with Zorin Linux, there's a thing called Wine, which lets you run Windows programs. It is hard to use. There is a thing called bottles.
Yeah.
Wine comes in bottles. that makes it a little easier, but not real easy. In Zorin, with one click, you install both wine and bottles. And then when you go to install a Windows program, it says, oh, I will run this under wine and bottles for you. Yeah. One click and it's installed and you're done.
Yeah. The big thing is having the tooling, the wine bottle smarts that say, you want to run this program. You want to run Microsoft Office 1997, which has 98% of the features you use in anything, and you're only comfortable in Word. Great. You can do that. It'll run great. It won't even complain. And it'll notice that you're using Microsoft Office from 1997 and make the tweaks appropriately so that Wine runs in a bulletproof manner.
Yep.
Windows won't actually do that for you.
What I really love is you can load a lot of that stuff from the software manager. And when you, specifically because I looked for this, when you go to load Office, it says, oh, I see you're trying to load Office.
Yeah.
You got three choices. You can either load Office with Wine and bottles.
Right.
You can use the web version, or why don't you try LibreOffice? It's free and it does everything anyway.
Right.
And then you just pick which of those you want and it makes it happen.
Right. But for people that are fixated on that 10%.
Gotta have Windows.
Thing in Windows. That's fine. Start here. And maybe you'll figure out eventually that that 10% you have to do in Windows is really 1%.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. That is absolutely right. And you'll find that we've talked about this many times. LibreOffice is free and runs on every operating system.
Mm-hmm.
It's free. At the very least, give it a try.
Yeah.
You've wasted nothing but a little bit of your time, and you may have saved yourself hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, I feel like Microsoft is positioning their marketing, pushing people towards buying Microsoft 365 to get all this stuff, and I hate the idiom that at the end of the day, but at the end of the day, I think there's probably really very little value to an end user to having that stuff that you don't get from LibreOffice. Just LibreOffice, even if you're running on Windows, which it runs on Windows. You don't have to even switch to Linux to use it.
That's exactly right. And people, look, I get it. Change is scary. And people are afraid of change. I fully understand that. But you have to understand that when you can save yourself potentially hundreds of dollars with subscriptions.
Well, it's a lock-in, right? Like at this point, they want you to lock in and
they
want,
they want to lock you in because they've been talking for years about subscriptions. They've been telling their shareholders, who are the only important people to them, that they're going to make Windows subscription-based.
The easiest
place to start is Office.
Absolutely.
Office 365, you pay them X dollars a year, and you get all this stuff, and it's online, and suddenly your measly little 5 gigabytes is full, and now you have to pay them more every year in order to save your own documents.
You got to pay for storage, too.
You got to pay for storage, too.
I mean, Google is in a similar...
But Google, right now, at least, Google Docs is free and you get 15 gig.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's they're a little less unreasonable.
Yeah.
Whereas for example, I use LibreOffice and I back everything up to my Bluehost online, one of the places and pCloud. I got the lifetime pCloud thing. And so far, I'm a winner. It's... So, but I also, you know, I'm already paying for unlimited storage on Bluehost because there's 10 years of 15, 20 years of sound bites up there. I have unlimited storage. Why wouldn't I use it?
Yeah. Well, and I think it's fair to say that as public radio, we sort of implicitly want to help people not waste their money.
Exactly right. Right, we're getting nothing from this, sadly. I don't know if you knew this, Dave. We don't get paid.
I'm getting your lovely company
still
for a few hours. That's what
I thought you said things were going to change.
Things are going to change. We're going to be paying them soon. That'll be next. But yeah. So and that's of course why we ask for donations a couple of times a year. I'm just preparing you. That's coming up in like October or something. The reality is that you can do a lot of what you want to do for free. And in this economy, why waste your money?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and give them a try. At the very worst, you've wasted a couple hours of your time, maybe a couple of days of your time. Compared to hundreds of dollars, that is not a bad swap.
And YouTube has a pretty good ecosystem of, hey, it's my first day with X program, whatever that is. And people making content to make it nice, to say, here's what you got to do first.
Yep. And that's absolutely true. You can get all kinds of help. There's us, of course, but we're once a week. YouTube is every day.
And you can fast forward YouTube, unfortunately.
And you're stuck with us you can download. Here's a benefit. Download the podcast and fast forward us.
Yeah,
that works. That works for me. I'll tell you that right now. So you can do that easily as well. And that's, you know, like I said, I've got hundreds and thousands of old podcasts up there. So you can listen to shows that for products that don't even exist anymore.
Awesome.
How is that not valuable?
You should share those with archive.org. I think they would love it.
I believe we're on archive.org, I think. Of course, they're in trouble right now, too. So,
really? What are they in trouble for?
Oh, they've lost a lot of money, and they've lost a couple of sponsors, and they're getting things back in track. But for a while there, they had some problems. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of hardware. It's a lot of hardware.
I love their content around making drive systems.
Yeah. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Franchi. No. With Dave Enright, with Chris Horn, with me. I get on autopilot. And look, it's 30 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1. It's time for me to shut up.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I'm having too much fun with this board.
Clearly you are. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Chris Horn, and I don't know what Dave's problem is.
Nobody knows what Dave's problem is. We only have 2 hours. We can't get into it.
Not enough time.
At 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
This board, it was well worth what 17 years that we worked on it.
Yeah.
To what we got now. It's beautiful. Well overdue.
It's a very nice board. And we want to thank
the audio board,
all our listeners.
All of the people who have become members of this station. It is because of you that we were able to redo the studio.
Well, the quality of the sound, you know, the show, they're listening during the week when they're listening to jazz. The quality
is much higher.
I've been listening to is so much better.
Yeah, it is.
It is like night and day, folks. I mean, if you haven't, you know, tune it in during the day while you're driving around the car or whatever. You don't have to just listen to this particular show, that. Just to listen to the jazz that they play all the time, and you'll definitely notice. And I got twin hearing aids. And
right. All right. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 while I read the news. Linus Torvalds has decided version 7.2 of the Linux kernel is ready for release, albeit in a new normal state that he seems not to entirely love. He announced the debut of a new kernel in his weekly development status update, which opens with the observation that this last week of the release was once again bigger than I would have wished for. He attributed the uncomfortable size to what he last week described as the new normal for the kernel at a time when developers have increased the volume of contributions using AI coding tools. One thing, it will end support for AppleTalk, which I don't think anybody's used for 30 years.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Not AppleTalk.
Say it said so.
It ain't so. It is so, but you asked me to say it wasn't.
Yeah.
Comcast is promoting Wi-Fi-based motion detection. It's part of its new Xfinity Shield home protection platform, allowing routers and wireless devices to detect people moving through the home without cameras or motion sensors. Wi-Fi motion works by turning the radio links between an Xfinity gateway and stationary Wi-Fi devices into virtual motion sensors. Customers detect stationary Wi-Fi devices such as smart speakers or thermostats positioned around the home. When someone moves through the area between the gateway or extender and one of those devices, their body changes how the Wi-Fi radio signals travel. Comcast says the system detects these changes in the home's radio frequency signals and uses them to determine that movement has occurred. Customers will then receive notifications through the Xfinity app without installing a camera or motion detector. Thankfully, Wi-Fi motion is opt-in and disabled by default, so no need to get creeped out. Yet. On Wednesday, Amazon said its AI assistant Alexa Plus will be rolled out to all compatible Fire TV devices in the U.S. for free, whether or not the customer has a Prime subscription. The update brings conversational search, smart home controls, and AI-powered recommendations. Previously, Alexa Plus cost $19.99 a month. That's $20 for the real world. For anyone who didn't have an Amazon Prime membership, now Amazon says that everyone will be upgraded to Alexa Plus automatically, whether you want it or not. Shut up, citizen, and move along. When someone uploads a photo to the People Search tool Clarity Check, the website has a clear message. Your reverse image search is private and secure. New research, though, shows that the website left more than 9 million image files, including photographs of people's faces, publicly exposed. And a second misconfiguration publicly exposed people's email addresses and phone numbers. Overall, according to findings from independent security researcher Jeremiah Fowle, the exposed Clarity Check database contained roughly 450 gigabytes of information, and particularly images, including what appeared to be profile images, screenshots, and other photographs of adults, teenagers, and children. All of the images were stored in an unsecured Amazon S3 bucket, which could be accessed by anyone online through a URL included in the company's publicly available website code. Those of you who go old school, thinking this may make you less susceptible to hackers, have a rude awakening coming. Threat actors are abusing FTP banners to hide commands that deliver remote access trojans. FTP banners are text strings that servers use as greeting messages for connecting hosts before they log in. So that you'll get that thing that says, welcome to such and so FTP. FTP, who uses FTP? A lot of people.
Yeah.
By embedding commands in the initial response set when a compromised system connects to an FTP server, a malware stager can receive instructions from a remote server. Is nothing sacred? Well, neither are we, but give us a call anyway at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll free at 800-790-0415. Yeah, we talked about this earlier. Linus Torvalds has a kind of love-hate relationship with AI. He gets a lot of lousy code from AI and a lot of unvetted code from people who say, oh, AI told me this is a problem. Did you test it? Isn't it your job? No. Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
My job is the final test, not the first test.
Yeah. Although Windows uses everybody.
Turn your mic on. There, now everybody can hear you.
Oh.
Well, it's radio.
Modern technology. Yeah, I know. Well, I'm still getting used to it. But no, I mean, whereas Windows, I mean, they're quite blunt. You know, they put stuff out there and let everybody beta test.
Right.
Whereas back in the day when you and I were doing it, we'd sit there and beta test Windows versions and different Office products.
You signed up to be a beta tester, yeah, and they gave you stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seemed like a privilege at the time.
Yeah. It yeah. was. Now it's just...
I can remember doing beta testing for the Windows XP.
Yep.
I did WinFax. I did some software for Norton for their antivirus program and that.
I did a bunch of stuff, including Microsoft Project, by the way.
And Corel. Corel was my biggest one because that's where I learned I did the logo for Soundbites.
Yep. I remember that. Yeah. I had fun with the project. I went there and they said, you know, if you want to be a beta tester, sign up. I did. And I, right there in the place, I looked at it. I said, you don't have this. 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 And the guy looked at me and said, you're the right guy to beta test this. Yes. Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Project management is what I do
right.
all day long.
That was so much fun, though. I mean, trying to, you know, find an error and then send it on in.
Well, and verify the error first. And that's yep. what people are missing when they send stuff to Torvalds. You make an error, and then you have to reproduce it.
At least once.
And these are the steps that caused it to happen.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You had to do up a whole workup sheet. I mean, at least with... when I was doing Corel, they wanted to know, you know, the time of day that I was doing it and everything
else. What else was running what you were doing. And
It was fun when I could fill one out and get it in, my first one. And it's like, all of a sudden they came back, you know, I think it was the next day. Oh, we noted this issue. Yes, we were able to replicate it and we'll get on it. Cool.
I will tell you what, in the early days, that's the way they were. I was using WordPerfect, and I bought I was selling computers at the time, and we got a brand new printer in, and it didn't work with WordPerfect. And I wrote to them, and I said, look, this new printer, when will you have a driver for it? The next morning, in email, I got a driver. They said, test this and see if it works.
That's cool.
There you go.
Everything worked. Overnight, they wrote a brand. They went and bought the printer because it was.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
we were selling them. We got the first batch.
Right.
They went and bought one. They wrote a driver for it and shipped it to me overnight. Holy moly! And that was in the days when you installed drivers by hand into WordPerfect directly.
WordPerfect bag of M&Ms.
Thank you, M&Ms.
Remember the little bag of M&Ms?
Oh, yeah. They used to come to the meetings and ask questions.
And they'd throw you a bag.
And if you got the answer, they'd throw you a bag
of M&Ms.
That's great.
The bags, not the little boxes.
Yeah.
Oh, take an eye out with those boxes.
When I used to go to Comdex, I used to come back with so many software packages because all I had to do was hand them my card from PC Cube, that I was the president of PC Cube, and... You know, give somebody and they'll do up a review. That's all they wanted to hear. Just please send us a copy of your newsletter with the review in it. And boy, I had some great relationships with so many. I was getting software all the time. Each meeting, we were giving away 3 and 4 major packages like Corel or WordPerfect. I'd solicit them, different companies, they'd gladly send it out.
And those were the days. They don't do much of that anymore.
Oh, they don't do
that. And it wasn't just that. Do you remember when we got all those Intel keychains?
Yep.
An Intel guy came to one of our meetings.
Yep.
We sat down and chatted with him about some stuff. And he gave us boxes of stuff.
Yeah.
Keychains with processors in them. I think they were probably
cute.
486. Yeah, this is forever ago.
Right, like 4004. Not even.
Right. But they just gave that stuff away. If you wanted pens, thumb drives.
Oh.
I had boxes and boxes of thumb drives.
Yep.
Yeah.
They would give away everything.
And the tchotchkes, when you went to Convex, I mean, I had a separate. Like tote bag.
I always had a suitcase, an empty suitcase whenever I went to one
of
them.
I
gave a talk at one. I gave a talk at more than one. But at one of them, I was there while they were breaking down. And I went by and the guy said, hey.
Hey, you want a whole bag of mouse pads? Or
well, he started with, hey, I loved your talk. Thank you very much. we chit-chatted, and he said, what do you want? And I said, I want the blimp.
Oh,
yes. He had
yes.
a blimp about this big. And he said, well, I can't give you that one, but I've got an unopened one over here. Would you like that? Yes, please.
That's the flying fun. Toaster. Remember the flying toaster?
I remember the flying toasters.
Screensaver. They were a
screensaver yeah. For Mac.
They actually had the one that yeah. had a little balloon.
Yep. That actually is a screensaver on Linux now, too. The flying toaster. Or just flying toast. So sure. you get your choice. You know,
yeah.
that's nice.
Either or.
Either or. But my favorite screensaver, I don't use screensavers. I just blank the screen. But my favorite screensaver, bouncing cows.
Okay. Is that part of the X screensaver collection?
Yes.
Okay.
And the tagline is, a cow, a trampoline, together they fight crime. And you can have up to 8 cows, depending on how good your graphics card is.
That's pretty fun.
All bouncing
yeah.
at
all
once.
Yeah. You two could probably help me.
I don't think so.
Could.
We're not psychiatrists.
Could is not the same thing as would, Dave.
Thank you. No, I've been using the Linux theme app. And, you know, and they've got all kinds of wallpapers and icons and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
So I downloaded one that changed the icons to look a lot like Windows.
Sure.
And I tried other packages. I tried installing
them. This is Zorin OS?
Yeah, Zorin OS 18.1. So I was trying to download, say, other packages, you know, try them out, because you can go into the themes there and select a different theme. Well, I put down some other themes, but they don't install. When I go over to, say, Zorin Appearance,
yeah.
and you go up to the themes, and you click the down bar, only one of them that I show or put in there shows up. If I try putting in, say, some other packages, they don't get updated.
And I'm sure you've rebooted, and they still didn't show up.
Yeah.
So
I didn't know
Zorin
if there was...
OS, Is that one of the Linux distributions that
yeah,
like everything is a flat pack? Yeah. Is it? But is everything a flat pack or
not
an app
necessarily?
Image?
Not necessarily. What you need to do is they go in .local, which is a hidden file.
Yep.
/share.
And yeah, and then in there and put it in there. That's where I had to put
but
the other
not
one.
Not every theme is Zorin compatible.
That's what I was wondering.
You probably want to go is to pling.com, pling.com.
P-L-I-N-G.
I think that's it. Hold on. Yeah, pling.com. You can get desktop themes, icon themes, and cursor themes.
And they'll work with the Zorin.
And most of them will work with
okay.
Zorin.
Okay. Well, I'll try it. I mean, going back about doing backups, even within Zorin, when I was first playing with it and setting it up, there's an app that you can put on and they recommend right away. It's called Time Shift.
Yeah.
And I installed that. So when I was putting in other things, you know, I was playing around just having fun. I didn't care. I'm an old systems person. If I screw it up, no biggie. I'll wipe it out and start again.
Right.
And that's where Time Shift is great.
And Time Shift works kind of like system restore.
Yeah, to that point in time.
Restore points or Time Machine backups.
Well, the Time Shift, when I first set it up, which I've done for decades with a system, is always make a copy of the plain vanilla system before I do anything. You know, okay. Other than some basic stuff. So then I could install stuff. If it messed it up, no problem. I went into Time Shift, said, yep, put me back to this time.
Yeah.
Boom, I'm back to the blank disk, you know, set up. And away I went and I did more mucking around. I spent a good 3 days just doing that, playing around. Oh, let's try this.
Yeah.
It kind of, and it didn't really work. It just messed things up. Boom. Went back and restored it.
The thing I love about it is that it's built into the file system for Linux. The BTRFS enables that. The snapshots are just part of it. And the Time Shift is an app that lets you do them automatically.
Yep.
It's not a weird flavor of Linux thing at all. It's built into the file system, which is not how system restore works on Windows. It's not how Time Machine works on Mac OS.
Yeah, but no, I was trying to play around with different, icons and so, some of the packages, like you said, Nick, just weren't compatible with Zorin.
Where you really want to go to get even more of them is opendesktop.org.
Oh, yeah, I've done that one.
Okay, and what you want are GTK or GNOME themes.
Okay.
Those are the ones that work with Zorin.
Open desktop. Yeah, I've got that saved.
But you can get GTK, KDE, and several other desktop. Stop, don't write that down. Because the only ones that work with Zorin are either GTK or GNOME.
I was going to say, isn't it GTK4?
Three or four. Depends. Okay. Some threes will work. Some four. All four should all work. Some threes might work. But you want GTK or GNOME, but you don't want KDEs, you don't want XFCEs, you don't want any of that.
If any listeners have been expecting Nick to bring this back to Hannah Montana OS, I am just as disappointed as you are.
Which is an Ubuntu-based system which runs on GTK and GNOME-based. So you could use...
You could also use it.
But it comes with its own backgrounds and icon sets and all that stuff.
If you were going to have your own theme.
See, this is where I hope...
Hannah Montana Linux is, I think... I don't know why everybody's not running it. I just don't understand that.
Well, you know, that's one thing, which we've talked about before. In all the 37 years coming up on now that we've been doing this show, we have seen so many transitions from the old desktop computer to now where we're doing so much stuff on our phones and, Windows starting to be a pain in the butt. And Linux has been a slow groundswell. And it's really growing more and more now as these developers are developing programs that resemble the current operating system that you're already using. Just like we say about a car. You might get a new car, and things are, maybe the buttons are a little different place, but they're still there. And the same with Zorin or any of these others. You can make them look like a Mac or a PC. If people could get that, I think the groundswell is going to grow even more that, people switch, and Microsoft is going to be hurting. Hurting for certain, I think. They already are with the Chromebooks. I mean, they lost the market in a lot of the schools and everything else because Chromebooks have made it so much easier for the schools to just hand out a Chromebook and they can control where the kids go. They can't go to porn sites. They can't go doing this or that. Parents can log in and see their grades and everything else. It's just that whole generation is slowly changing that we're seeing within our time frame, what we've seen since the day we started this show to where we are now.
The MacBook Neo is a direct answer to the Chromebook.
Yeah.
There's no question of that.
And foundationally, the Chromebook is still Linux.
Well, it's Linux underneath, and just like Android is Linux underneath, and that's one of the reasons that the year of the Linux desktop is finally here. Thank heaven.
Well, the one thing that I am always in awe about is when we first started out is trying to Dragon speak.
Oh, yeah.
How far we've come now to where even on our phone, we can hit a speaker, a little microphone button. All right. And do a search on how old is so-and-so. And it will go out and come back with the answer and talk it, speak to you on it.
Right. And with Drag and Dictate, you can now do that for free on Google Docs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a solved problem. And if you had the opportunity to put one of the AI chat apps on your phone and just talk to it, you can just have a conversation with it. That's how good...
And a lot of people are doing that, which is a problem for teenagers, but is you're right. For a lot of people, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this has just been in, 46 years, say, from 1980. I'm going from 1980 to now. In just that short time span, how far we've come to thinking, eh, yeah, no, that's too hard to do to know is, yeah, no big deal. AI can sit there and figure stuff out and help us along.
There was a long time where, as a fan of science fiction, I felt like sci-fi authors were trying to design this future for us, right? They're trying to point and say, this is where we should go, right? That's Star Trek. Actually, that's
there you go.
That's Star Trek in a nutshell. And for most of my life, I felt like, oh, we are really lagging behind. We are, you know, how many post-apocalyptic, horrible movies we watched that, you know, we've gone past all those dates. And in the last couple of years, I feel like things have really ramped up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all good.
It used to be, I used to say, except for the magic, like transporters and warp drive.
Yeah.
And the power of the computers. The only difference between Star Trek and us was no wires. Now, we don't even have that, and we're catching up on the computers.
Yep. Yeah. Well, look at how small they are now. I mean, those little boxes that, well, what I just
replaced. I got more power on my wrist than we sent to the moon.
Yeah. Well, the same with a lot of the greeting cards. Like they say, the greeting cards with the little chip in them, and they can sing happy birthday, blah, 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 and you can program them. That's more technology than existed then.
Yep, that's exactly right. It's a we've gone an astonishing amount distance, and we have farther to go. It's just a matter of getting there, I guess. All right, that's it. We are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank everybody who's listening. I want to thank everybody who's watching on the stream. I want to thank who could possibly be Chris Horn, I'm thinking, for taking time off from his valuable Saturday to come in here and muck about with us. I want to thank Dave Enroy for staying mostly awake through the show and hitting some of the buttons correctly. That was well done, Dave, this week.
That's right. I'm learning.
He's learning, and I do want to thank all of you. You have been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly, truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you? And hug your loved ones.